असतो मा सद्गमय तमसो मा ज्योतिर्गमय मृत्योर्मा अमृतम गमय. लीड अस फ्रॉम द अनरियल टू द रियल, लीड अस फ्रॉम डार्कनेस अनटू लाइट, लीड अस फ्रॉम डेथ टू इमॉर्टलिटी. Let us sit quietly for a few minutes and meditate in any way we please. Om Sthapakaya cha Dharmasya Sarvadharma Swarupine Avatar Varishthaya Ramakrishnaya Te Namaha. I bow down to Sri Ramakrishna, who established religion, embodying in himself the reality of all religions and being thus the foremost of divine incarnations. The subject this morning is the selfless work, the ideal and its practice. A monk who lived in the Belur Math in olden times recalls, if someone did something absent-mindedly in an haphazard way, Swami Premananda would immediately stop him and say, if you are thinking of something else, finish it first and then come and work here. Otherwise, you do not need to do this. Whatever you do here will be akin to serving the master. Only with this attitude of reverence and sanctity should you start any piece of work. Then he says, there is so much activity going on in this world. Where then is the difference between those activities and our work? Where is the difference? So we are going to try to reflect on that this morning and try to understand. First, what we mean by work. Work or activity or action, the Sanskrit word for it is karma. We all know that. The word karma is derived from the root kri, to do. All action is karma. Technically, it also means effects of past actions. But for today's discussion, when we are discussing selfless work, we will simply focus on karma as meaning work. Generally, we find that more work we do, the more tired we get. The more we get involved in any work, the more we suffer from worry, anxiety, tension. Therefore, we look toward weekends, days off, and vacations. We must work, and here it is important to remember that work does not mean only physical action. It includes mental actions also. Well, has it been said in the Gita, one can never for a moment remain without action. A person might forcefully stop all his outgoing senses and keep his hands and feet at rest, but that would not imply his cessation from action. All his pent-up thoughts would begin to bubble up inside his mind, and he would be mentally more active than before. Vedanta philosophy teaches us that we are not just body minds, but are essentially the divine self or the Atman. Though this eternal self is the source of infinite knowledge, infinite bliss, knowledge of this higher self remains latent in most of us. The world occupies our whole being, and we desire happiness and fulfillment from finite things of this world. Vedanta calls this ignorance. From the depths of human mind, unsatisfied desires continuously rise, create mental disturbances, and becoming strong, these desires find expression in outward activities. Thus, we are in a perpetual chain of avidya, kama, karma, ignorance, desire, action. So this is how we are propelled into action continuously. And the downside of work or action we see, whether it's physical or mental, is that it brings bondage. It wears us down. How? Two ways. Bondage comes from, number one, the impression every action leaves on our minds, and number two, our attachment to the results of our action. So let us look into these two points a bit more. First, every action leaves impression on our minds. This is very important. Swamiji brings this point as the first point in his Karma Yoga. As spiritual seekers, this is our utmost concern. Every action produces two kinds of results. First, the gross, tangible result which we find outside, and second, the tendency to repeat that same action again. This second result is subtle and directly connected with the mind. It is called samskara, or past impression. This samskara becomes the real cause of our bondage. Every action done with selfish motive produces samskara in the mind of the doer. Giving the simile of a lake for the mind, in his Karma Yoga lectures, Swami Vivekananda says, every work that we do, every movement of the body, every thought that we think, leaves such an impression on the mind stuff. And even when such impressions are not obvious on the surface, they are sufficiently strong to work beneath the surface subconsciously. And this prompts us to do similar mistakes again and again. Thus we see the cause of bondage is in the mind, not in the work itself. Secondly, the result of a work, good or bad, becomes the cause of bondage only when the worker is attached to the result of his or her work. With this attachment comes all kinds of bondage and misery. We often misunderstand this point. Being unattached does not mean lack of attention to the work itself or being careless about it. It is being unattached to what we get in return. Swami Vivekananda says, attachment comes only when we expect a return. The modern way of life teaches us from the beginning that we have a right to get the fruit of our work. This tendency of always asking and expecting the fruits of work has made us a beggar and has become a cause of bondage and misery. When we analyze our minds, we find that selfishness is at the root of all the expectations. When our life is self-centered, we want everything for us. My comfort, my opportunity, my gain. These become the guiding principles of a selfish man. Had there been no selfishness in our heart, there could not have been any attachment in us. But some introspection tells us that somewhere we have attachment for things of this world, and that has become the cause of bondage and pain in our life. The remedy lies in removing this selfishness. Swami Vivekananda says, the man who walks through freedom and love cares nothing for results. But the slave wants his whipping, the servant wants his pay. The public speaker wants a little applause. If you keep him in a corner without it, you kill him, for he requires it. This is working through slavery. To expect something in return under such conditions becomes second nature. Next comes the work of the servant who requires some pay. I give this and you give me that. Nothing is easier than to say, I work for work's sake, but actually nothing is so difficult to attain. Then he says, I would go 20 miles on my hands and knees to look on the face of a man who can work for work's sake. There is a motive somewhere. If it is not money, it is power. If it is not power, it is gain. Somehow, somewhere, there is a motive power. You are my friend, and I want to work with you, and I want to work for you, but you must be sure to agree with me. This kind of work brings misery. Another great cause of attachment is our idea that someone is dependent on me and I am doing good to that person. A little thinking reveals that no one really depends on us. Swami Vivekananda says that this attitude of our mind is another cause of all our attachments. He says it is a weakness to think that anyone is dependent on me in this world and I can do good to another. This belief is the mother of all attachment, and through this attachment comes pain. Thus, we see that the work by itself, is neither cause of bondage, nor does it degrade us, but it is the mind, the attitude of the doer, that is the cause of attachment and bondage. Work has been described as a key to the door. You turn the key in one direction and it locks the door. The same key, if you turn in another direction, it unlocks the door. Similarly, work done in one way binds us to the world, and the same work done in a different way unlocks the door to freedom and perfection. Work, when done with egotism and attachment, binds the soul more and more. Repeated self-centered thoughts and actions make previous impressions stronger and drag the person to the plane of birth and death or worldly existence. But when the same work is done with detachment in an unselfish manner, purely for the welfare of others, or as a service to the Lord, our old tendencies of the mind gradually wear out. They lose their sway over us, and gradually we are led to liberation. And the uniqueness of man is that he has the freedom of choosing his motive. We may not have the freedom to choose our field of action, for we are where we have been placed in this life. We have no choice over it, but we can always choose the attitude of mind with which we perform the duties that have been placed before us. Then those same actions will lead us to perfection. Now that is the goal, and what are the means? There are two ways to do this. First, those who do not believe in God or do not believe in any idea of a spiritual principle or divinity, the way is to do good because it is good to do good. Doing what is right because it is good to do the right thing. No other consideration is necessary. Swami Vivekananda called this work for work's sake. I do a piece of work and expect that my work will be appreciated, recognized, at least my contribution will be acknowledged. No. Do not expect any gratitude, do not expect any return. Just do it because it is good to do good. No other reason. But for most of us, this actually is extremely difficult to do. So there is another way. Those who believe in a spiritual principle, in God or divinity, the idea is to do every piece of action as an offering to Him. This is Karma Yoga as expounded in the Gita. And Swamiji has expanded this idea further in our time. God dwells in all beings as the indwelling spirit. Thus, interaction with any human being is akin to interacting with the divinity within him or her. And therefore, service to every human being is service to God. This is Swamiji's practical Vedanta. And this is what he actually learned from his guru, Sri Ramakrishna. We should always remember how this idea came to Swamiji. It was 1884. Sri Ramakrishna was sitting in his room surrounded by his disciples, among whom was Narendra, later Swami Vivekananda. The conversation drifted to the Vaishnava religion. Talking about the Vaishnava religion, the master said, quote, "This religion asks its followers to practice three things: chant the name of the Lord, compassion for all living beings, and the service of the devotees of God. The real meaning of these three precepts is, God is not different from His name. Therefore, one should always repeat His name. God and His devotee are not separate from each other. So one should serve the devotees as God. And understanding that this world belongs to the Lord, one should show compassion for all beings." As he said compassion for all beings, Sri Ramakrishna suddenly went into Samadhi. After a while, he came down to a semi-ecstatic state and said, "Compassion for all beings? How foolish to speak of compassion. Human beings are as insignificant as worms crawling on the earth, and they are to show compassion to others? That is absurd. It must not be compassion, but service to all. Recognize all as manifestations of God and serve them as such." Now, everyone heard the master's words that day, but no one except Swami Vivekananda understood their real import. When the master came to the normal plane of consciousness, Narendra left the room and said to some of his friends and brother disciples, "What a wonderful light I saw today in those words of the master. How beautifully did he reconcile the simple, sweet, and refreshing ideal of devotion with the knowledge of Vedanta, which people believe to be dry, difficult, and heartless. For so long we have heard that anyone who wants to attain the highest non-dual knowledge must retire to the forest, shunning family and friends completely, and forcibly uprooting love, devotion, and other sweet sentiments from the heart, driving them away forever. If spiritual seekers who strive to attain that knowledge consider this world and all people within it to be impediments to their spiritual paths, they will develop hatred towards them and go astray. But what the master said today in his ecstatic mood is clear. One can bring Vedanta from the forest to the home and practice it in daily life. Let people continue with whatever they are doing. There's no harm in this. People must first believe and understand that God has manifested Himself before them and as the world and its creatures. Whomever people come in contact with in every moments of their lives, whomever they treat with love, respect, and compassion, they all are parts of God, God Himself. If people consider every human being to be God, how can they consider themselves to be superior to others and harbor anger, hatred, arrogance, or even compassion towards them? Their minds will become pure as they serve all beings as God, and soon they will experience themselves as part of the blissful God, by nature pure, illumined, and free. Embodied beings cannot remain without activity even for a moment. So their duty is to perform every action as service to God. Thus, they will soon reach the goal. If it is the will of God, I shall proclaim to the world at large the noble truth that I have heard today. I shall preach this wonderful message to all, the wise and the ignorant, the rich and the poor. And as we know, he did. This is what he preached. This is Vedanta in action, or practical Vedanta. Selfless work, whether we do it as an offering to God or as work for work's sake, is actually very difficult to practice. But if we are sincere, if we try, we can do it slowly but gradually and surely. And our teachers give us some recommendations to how to practice this. We acknowledge that this is very difficult to do. A person engaged in work invariably deals with a certain amount of tension, frustration, difference of opinion, and misunderstanding. Such experiences overwhelm us. We are advised, therefore, to balance the work with other spiritual disciplines, such as scriptural studies, time-to-time introspection, and regular, effortful periods of contemplation and meditation. Selfless work certainly purifies the mind, but at the same time, without regular contemplation and thinking of God, it is not possible also to practice selfless work. We easily lose sight of the ideal. We forget whose work it is, who are we working for. And also, recollectedness of God, or maintaining a spiritual undercurrent in mind, as much as possible throughout the day, in the middle of all our activities, is a great help for us who are engaged in action. Swami Brahmananda laid great stress on remembering God while engaged in work. He often said, "Remember the Lord in the beginning of the work, while you are working, and after you have finished. On this, and offer whatever you have done to the Lord." Now, on the subject of offering one's work to God and remembering Him after finishing a piece of work, once a devotee raised a question to Swami Madhavananda that this remembrance, this offering that you are saying, is only for perhaps a few seconds after half an hour of work. Just these few seconds of remembrance, offering to God, is that enough? And Swami's reply was very significant. He said, "Put all those seconds together and you have something really important. Just as 10 seconds of deep sleep, when we lose awareness of the world around us, refreshes us so much, so these momentary remembrances of God throughout the day will benefit us. Through such practice, the time will come when we will be able to remember Him more and more." I'm going to now shift the direction a little bit and talk about some real example of selfless work. So we have so far discussed the ideal of the selfless work. The ideal is great, but we also wish to see concrete examples. It is very inspiring for us to see and learn how a person really performing such ideals live his daily life, how he serves people truly as manifestation of God. Is that possible? How he behaves, what his daily routine is like. Many monks of the Ramakrishna order are embodying these ideals and quietly living their lives as an offering to Sri Ramakrishna. Today, just as an example, I shall talk a little bit about one such monk whose life shines as an example of selfless action. Our field of work may be different than his, but we can apply the same principles in our life also. He has passed away. For the most part of his monastic life, he served at the Ramakrishna Mission Home of Service in Varanasi. It is a huge charitable hospital run by the order. It started with a very humble beginning, but it has continuously grown over more than 100 years, and now it is a huge institution. The Swami's monastic name was Swami Muktananda, pre-monastic name Bonobihari. He was well known in Varanasi and in the Ramakrishna order as Bonobihari Maharaj or Bono Baba. In Varanasi, the holy people are often referred to as with the suffix Baba, so people popularly called him Bono Baba. The Swami left home and joined the order when he was in the final year of his high school. He received spiritual initiation from Mahapurush Maharaj Swami Shivananda. He also received his Brahmacharya vows, the first monastic vows, from Swami Shivananda. In those days, at least in Varanasi, the novice monks had to actually go out to beg for food sometimes. To make it a little easy for him to receive alms in Varanasi, Mahapurushji also gave him the monastic ochre cloth. And at that time, he blessed this young monk and said, "Stay here and serve the Narayana in these patients. You will attain devotion, liberation, everything through this service." Keeping firm faith in the words of his guru, this monk served at the Home of Service with supreme steadfastness till almost the last day of his life. I am reading from an article originally published in the Bengali magazine Udbodhan, where another monk actually wrote a long reminiscence of Swami Muktananda Bonobihari Maharaj. So I am reading part of that article. Bono Baba said to other junior monks about their philosophy of service. He said, "See, following the master's ideal, Swamiji has asked us to serve God in human beings. And this center has been developed with that ideal in mind. Unless you can serve, unless you can work as if you are serving Lord Narayana himself, nothing will come out of this work." Revered Hari Maharaj Swami Turiyananda used to say that one who can serve a person truly as manifestation of the Lord, even for 3 days, will definitely attain the knowledge of Brahman. In 1934, when Bonobihari was a novice monk, there was a devastating earthquake in the Bihar state in India, and the Ramakrishna Mission took very active part in the relief work there. It so happened that a certain Western lady became so impressed with the relief work conducted by the monks that after returning to her country, she published in a magazine a detailed description of the work conducted by the monks and brahmacharis. A few months later, that magazine came to Swami Akhandananda, another direct disciple of Sri Ramakrishna and at that time president of the order at the monastery headquarters. When Swami Akhandananda read that report, he was very sad to read the description of the relief work. And he said to the monks present, "Is there any difference between our work and spiritual practices such as japa and meditation? Will you publish in magazine how much japa and meditation do you do every day?" This incident made a deep impression on Bono Baba's mind. So here is how his daily routine used to be for the most part of his life. Every morning, he would walk to the Ganges, bathe in the river, then visit the temples of Lord Vishwanath and Divine Mother Annapurna in Varanasi. There he would spend time in japa and meditation. After coming back, he would drink a cup of tea and then go to the Sevashrama hospital to release the monks who had been there on night shift. And in those days, the monks and brahmacharis did every aspect of the work in the hospital. You have to understand this was a very old time and they did not have paid workers and the facilities, the medical facilities were also very primitive. Then after lunch, Bono Baba took a brief rest. Then later in the afternoon, every day he went to the Kedar temple with his meditation carpet. He again took a bath in the Ganges, sat on a piece of stone on the bank of the river and performed japa and meditation for a long time. He followed this routine for more than 40 years. Then in his reminiscences, here the monk says, when he had joined as a junior monk and came to know Bono Baba, at that time he was almost 81 years old. He still went to the hospital every day after breakfast and he performed wound care for on about 40 or 50 patients. This Swami was particularly known for his wound care. He was popularly known as wound care Swami. He used to do dressing and put bandage and, you know, take care of the wounds after surgery or everything. Now he says the way he applied dressing on a wound was something to watch. It seemed as if he was performing worship with earnest devotion. While cleaning the wound on the patient, he talked very kindly to the patients on various topics to divert his mind from the pain. In spite of the physical suffering, the patient's face would light up. So many patients would come with such a foul smell on their bodies that we could not enter the room. Bono Baba, however, served everyone without no reaction on his face. Once we had asked him, "Aren't you bothered by the foul smell?" He gently smiled and said, "I do not smell anything bad." When there were patients who had developed complicated sores, the doctors would actually request Bono Baba to dress their wounds. Many people believed if he dresses their wounds, they would be cured. The following incident occurred at Kedar Ghat in Varanasi on two consecutive days, not once but twice. It so happened that two monks came to visit, and three monks, together with Bono Baba, went to visit the Kedar temple in the afternoon when he goes there for meditation. Afterwards, they all sat on the steps on the bank of the river. These three monks sat together and Bono Baba sat in his usual spot and meditated. Quite some time had passed. Suddenly, the three monks who were sitting higher up on the embankment saw a snake crawling over Bhanu Baba's body. "Snake, snake," they shouted. But Bhanu Baba did not respond. The snake coiled around his body, then left on its own. A long time after this, Bhanu Baba finished his meditation and got up. When the other monks told him about the snake, he said, "I did not feel anything." Then the author writes that, you know, he himself was serving at the hospital alongside Bhanu Baba. One day he was very disheartened, and seeing his face gloomy, Bhanu Baba said, "What's the matter? Why such a face today?" So this young monk says, "We lost two patients today. In spite of our best efforts, we couldn't save them. So I feel heartbroken." So as a way of training them, to show them the ideal of work, Bhanu Baba told them a funny story. He presented it in a funny way. He said, "Listen to a story. Shiva lives in Kailasa and he is absorbed in meditation, and Divine Mother Parvati has to manage all the affairs of the creation. Now one day, the Ashwini brothers, the physicians of the gods, sang hymns in praise of Shiva and brought him down from Samadhi and said, 'Lord, it has become unbearable for us to watch the pain and afflictions of the world. Kindly give us remedies for these sufferings.' Pleased with their prayer, Lord Shiva apparently told them the treatments of all ailments of the world. So the physicians of the gods were overjoyed and left. And then when Parvati heard about it, she said, 'What have you done? Now nobody will die in this world, and I have to manage this whole creation. So this is a big problem.' But then Shiva smiled and said, 'Don't worry, I have kept a loophole. It is true that I have given the medicine for all ailments, but I have kept one thing in my hands, and it is to confuse the mind of the doctor when the time comes. So don't worry, they will not be able to remember the right medicine at the right time.'" And then Bhanu Baba said to this young monk serving at the hospital, "See, do not worry too much. Your duty is to serve the patient Narayanas to the best of your ability, which you have done. Leave the rest up to the master." So this is what is meant by work without attachment, where we focus all the efforts on the means but not on the result. Once a doctor faced a problem regarding the service of the patients. What happened was, so many patients were coming to his outpatient ward that he had to be there from 8 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon without a break. Concerned that he might fall sick from working such long hours, some people were suggesting that he should have fixed hours and treat only a fixed number of patients. So one day he asked Bhanu Baba for his advice, what she should do. After listening to everything, Bhanu Baba said, "See, it may be a little hard on you, but just think of the poor patient Narayanas. They spend so much money to come to the master from such long distances. If they go back empty-handed, do you think the master will be pleased with us? Brother, I would say that no matter how hard it may be for you, go on serving the master to the best of your ability. It will bring welfare to you." Remembering those words, the doctor continued serving the patients till late in the afternoon every day. One day Bhanu Baba told very vividly how service can be turned into worship. So initially he used to visit the Vishwanath and Annapurna temple every morning. That was part of his spiritual practice. There came a time as he grew older that he could no longer visit the temples every day as he used to. But he continued to serve at the Sevashrama every day. So a monk asked him, "Maharaj, previously used to go to the temples every day, but you cannot go there anymore. Do you feel sad?" Bonababa replied, "It is true that I cannot go to see Lord Vishwanath at the temple, but I do not regret it because I worship him right here. For instance, when a patient comes to me for care and I pour saline water or hydrogen peroxide on his wound, then I think I am pouring water on Lord Shiva. After that, when I apply some ointment, I think that I am offering sandal paste to the Lord. Then I place the gauze as if I am placing a willow leaf. And finally, I do japa while wrapping the bandage. Brother, I get immense joy and satisfaction out of this." Another monk asked, "Maharaj, have you ever become angry?" Bonababa said, "If I saw someone damaging the ashrama in any way, I would become very angry, and I still do." He had such deep love for the master, and everything that belonged to the center belonged to the master. This thought was ingrained in him. So if anyone caused any damage there, he would certainly get angry, not otherwise. He also had some remarkable qualities in his character. No one ever heard him criticize anyone. Although he was immensely respected, he never accepted any special service or any special privilege. Whenever the Swami in charge would talk about getting an air conditioner for his room during the scorching heat of summer, he would say, "There are many other elderly monks here. If a cooler can be installed in everyone's room, then I do not have any objection to getting a cooler for this room also." So that is what was finally done. He used to address all monks and brahmacharis, young and old, as brother, and spoke to everyone very respectfully. He never spoke harsh words to anyone. As a result of standing on his feet for long hours at the clinic, he could not bend his legs in his later years. However, he never complained about it. Bonababa's general health was quite good. Except for the pain in his knees, he had no other health problem. But in natural course, his body aged and he had to undergo some minor surgeries. And there came a point when he could no longer serve at the hospital. This inability to serve affected him deeply. Although he talked to everyone with a smiling face, sometimes he seemed to be lost somewhere. Perhaps he was getting ready to enter peace. It was hard to tell. Finally, how he passed away? It was Saturday, 15th June 1996. After his regular morning routine and visit to the Shiva temple, which was within the compound of the monastery, followed by his breakfast, Bonababa said to this young monk, "Please give me the rosary and then go to attend to your service." I helped him lie down, put a little Ganges water in his hands and gave him his rosary. After a few minutes of this, he passed away. So this is a shining example of selfless work in action. And I shall close with another small incident depicting how selfless work can be done into spiritual practice. This is a reminiscence by Swami Vishuddhananda, another very, very highly respected monk. he used to, he's extremely well known for his, spiritual height that he reached. And in his early days, he used to visit the Dakshineshwar temple regularly and go and meditate there. He talks about a gardener he saw in the Dakshineshwar temple garden in the early 1900s. He says that I met a gardener of 76 or 77 years who had worked in the temple garden during Mathur Babu's time, which means he must have seen Sri Ramakrishna. This gardener must have seen Sri Ramakrishna. And he says that I first saw him cleaning very carefully the path from the master's room to the Panchavati grove, which is a long distance. And he would go there and he sees this gardener cleaning this path every day. He was a little bent because of his age, but he steadfastly cleaned that path up to the pine grove and bell tree. After I saw this for several days, I was a little curious. Because I saw him do the same work every day with great devotion. Then one day I asked him, "Have you seen the master?" So he laid his broom to the ground and then looked at me in wonder, and this gardener said, "I am following his order only." What does he mean? He says the master told me that many of his devotees would come here, so I am cleaning this path for them. He was reluctant to say anything more. Then Swami Vishuddhananda pressed him to say something more, and he said a wonderful story. He said, "One summer night I could not fall asleep, so I went for a walk in the garden. I saw a light coming from a distance. I followed the light trail and found the master immersed in samadhi under the bell tree. A divine light emanated from his body. I was so scared I could not stay there long, and I came away. The next morning I went to him, fell at his feet and burst into tears. The master asked, 'What is the matter? Why do you have so much overflowing devotion today?' I said, 'Master, please bless me.' He realized what was in my mind. He lifted me up and said, 'Meditate on the form that you saw last night and clean the path to the Panchavati. Many devotees will come here in the future.' So I meditate on that luminous form of the master and clean this path every day." So this is how he does selfless service to the devotees and performs his spiritual discipline. So we see our ideal of selfless work is far more than just a voluntary work. It is rooted in the principle that human beings are divine, and when done in the correct way, it can connect us to the divine through our everyday actions and slowly but surely transform us. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishvate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. That is perfect, this is perfect. From the perfect is derived. The perfect having been subtracted, the perfect verily remains. Om, peace, peace, peace.